This is VIX, a biographical series made possible through a grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and produced by Miami University Radio. Just before the Paul Whiteman Orchestra was to leave New York on tour in October 1928, Frank Trombauer assembled a band for a recording session. Trombauer was finding an advantage in more commercial arrangements, and the growth in size of his band reflected his pleasure. For the October 5th date, the band had 9 instrumentalists and singer Martin Hunt. Frank Powers discusses Love Nest, recorded by the Frank Trombauer Orchestra.
Again, this is typical of the period of the Trombauer recordings, increasingly commercial, a far cry from singing the blues.
Bill Rank, featured on the trombone in Love Nest, was a regular member of the Whiteman Orchestra. He traces the route of the 1928 tour and mentions one of Bix Beiderbecke's elaborate schemes to avoid a fine for missing a performance with Whiteman.
That was in 1928. We were on a concert tour that started in New York, at Carnegie Hall, and we went on down the coast, Richmond, Virginia, and on down into Atlanta, Georgia, and Florida, and on around in through Texas, and we wound up in Canada, at Toronto, I believe, and then back into New York, a great big circle. But this particular time, we had a 7:30 a.m. train to make. And, of course, Bix, being a very popular fellow all over the country, he naturally, after the concert, why, he'd be invited here and invited there, and oblivious of what time it was or what time he had to get up. So we were all down at the railroad station ready, waiting on this train to come in. And we said, where's Bix? Nobody had seen him. So finally somebody said, well, gosh, the train's due here in about 5 minutes, so we better call the hotel. So they called the hotel and got the desk clerk on the phone. We told him to ring Beiderbecke's phone, and if he didn't answer, to send a bellboy up and get him up and tell him that the train has left. And, of course, we all had our itineraries. We knew exactly where we were going to play, whether it was a matinee or concert or an evening concert. So they evidently got Bix up. And as the story goes, Bix told it later on what happened. He got down, paid his bill, jumped in a taxi cab and told him, says, take me to the airport, this small town where we were. Well, it was just a field with a windsock, and he found out who had a plane for hire. So he finally located this man with his plane, open ship, open cockpit. Asked him, he said, how much you charge me to take me to Amarillo, Texas? I said, $65. We were in probably Houston or someplace around there. It wasn't too far from Amarillo. Of course, Amarillo is up north in the panhandle of Texas. But I don't think it was over 200 miles, 200 or 300 miles where we had to go. So Bix says, okay. So he hand Bix a helmet and goggles, put his grip and his trumpet case in the open cockpit ship, and away they went. And they flew to Amarillo. He beat the train. He arrived first. So he thought, ah, get the right idea. I won't check in a hotel. I'll go right to the place we're going to play. I'll be there. He was still sleepy. And after being in that air, that made him worse. So in this auditorium we were playing, backstage was a big backdrop down there next to the wall, and there was a lot of scenery rolled up. So Bix crawled in back of this backdrop and laid down on this scenery. You couldn't see him. He was there. So finally, about 1:30, quarter of 2, the concert, it was 2:30, when the trucks came in with all the trunks, instrument trunks, you know, and we got ready to play, and still no Bix. So we had to go on without him. And on intermission, we're all backstage, and out from behind this backdrop emerged Bix, all sleepy-eyed. So Paul said, where have you been? Well, I said, I was right there. I was sleeping right there on top of that scenery back there. And Paul said, you didn't hear the first half of the concert? You didn't hear the band? No. He didn't. We're sleeping right on the stage and didn't hear it. So the story goes, he missed the train. He arrived before we did, in plenty of time for the concert, and it cost him $65 to do it. Paul was pretty provoked at him at that time, because Bix had a few spots, you know, where he played in the concert, and somebody else had to fill in.
The rigors of keeping to a busy schedule bothered Bix. He left the Whiteman Band after its tour of the South. The departure is recalled by one of the band's arrangers, Bill Challis.
He left the band. He had some sort of, I think it was in Cleveland, he had some sort of, an attack. And then I think Whiteman then sent him to a sanitarium over in Astoria, a hospital, to hospitalize him for a week or a couple of days or something like that. I remember going over to see him there. And then he went back in the band again. Oh, I think that Whiteman said, maybe you'd better go home for a while. I think he went home then. I think that's the way it was. And then he came back, and Whiteman took him in the band again. I think this was Boggy had got Andy Sequist.
Paul Whiteman continued to send Bix his full salary while he regained his strength. Until Bix was able to return to the orchestra in early 1929, Paul Whiteman filled the vacant chair in his brass section with Andy Segrist. April 17, 1929, found both Bix and Andy Segrist recording with Frank Krombauer. Frank Powers compares the styles of Beiderbecke and Segrist on the Krombauer recording of Baby, Won't You Please Come Home.
In the spring of 1929, the Krombauer recording session of Baby, Won't You Please Come Home brings an interesting thing to the fore. Bix had been absent from the Whiteman band for a certain period of time. A trumpet player had been hired who we could classify as Bix Beiderbecke imitator. His name was Andy Segrist. Andy Segrist had earned his wings as a Bix Beiderbecke imitator in the Gene Goldkett Orchestra after Bix had left that organization. For many years, many collectors and Beiderbecke experts were confused as to whether certain solos on the Whiteman and Krombauer recordings of 1929 were played by Andy Segrist or Bix Beiderbecke. As ears became a bit more sophisticated, the truth emerged. As in this instance of the 1929 recording of Baby, Won't You Please Come Home. Of course, the vocal is by Frank Krombauer, and one wishes, when they hear this vocal, that Krombauer had the discretion to have invited Bing Crosby into the studios, as he did on Mississippi Mud, because Krombauer's vocals leave something to be desired. But we do have an interesting situation here. We have the verse to Baby, Won't You Please Come Home being played by Andy Segrist. And then Under the Derby Hat, which was a stylistic feature of Bix of that period, as we've mentioned before, Bix plays this beautiful chorus. The contrast between the rather rough, untutored style of Segrist, the Beiderbecke imitator, is apparent. There are many people that played in the Beiderbecke style. Andy Segrist was unique. Let me put it this way. Jimmy McPartland's style resembled Beiderbecke's. So did Red Nichols. But Segrist was playing with the same group of musicians that Bix played with under the same circumstances, and this permitted him to be in a position to cause confusion. But there is a certain rough edge to Andy Segrist, a certain quality, which I would categorize as Segrist's individualism as a musician. In other words, he was not a blatant imitator. His playing of the verse of Baby, Won't You Please Come Home is a contrast, in a sense, to Bix's chorus.
Come home.
2 weeks after this session, the Trombauer Orchestra recorded a tune, I Like That. Frank Powers has some comment on the origin of the tune and on its treatment by the Trombauer Group.
I Like That. Now, this is the same number as Loved One. Loved One is the same tune, in other words. However, we're talking about the particular Trombauer recording of I Like That. Now, again, we hear Bix Under the Hat, a beautiful performance near the end of the recording as he just seems to liven the ensemble in a beautiful manner. A typical Trombauer commercial recording of that period. But Bix's cornet work raises this to a very high level. The outcourse the orchestra is taking on this recording is quite ordinary, but above it all, a very inspirational counter melody under the derby hat, as was Bix's habit that period. Very beautifully done. Listen, you'll hear it.
The last recording of Bix with the Whiteman Orchestra to be heard in this series is China Boy. Arranged by Lenny Hayton, China Boy was cut on May 3, 1929. The tune had been the one played by the Wolverines as the New Year's Eve riots closed the Stockton Club in 1924. With the recording of this tune, 5 years later, another phase of Beiderbecke's career was drawing to a close.
Paul White and the orchestra recorded the jazz classic, China Boy. Bix took 16 bars of monstrously beautiful cornet, again under the derby hat, a masterpiece. something had happened to Bix. China Boy is within two other recordings of his final statement with the Whiteman Band. The tragedy of Bix's final days were very close at hand. He was to have several recording dates, I believe, just two recording dates with Hoagy Carmichael, and another recording date with his own group, both on Victor, before the tragedy of August 1931. The Carmichael sides and the Victor recordings made under his own name were to be the last statement of Beiderbecke after the termination of his playing with Whiteman.
Only two more recording sessions occurred before Bix left the Whiteman organization permanently. One wonders what the leader might remember of his despondent cornet player.
Hello, I'm Paul Whiteman, and I'd like to add my voice in tribute to the great Bix Beiderbecke. I won't have to talk about his musicianship because I'm sure that we're also familiar with his great playing and his fine composing. That, of course, is well known, and I know that will be well dwelt on and should be. However, I would like to speak just a second about the Beiderbecke as a man. You know, I know Bix very intimately, and as long as I knew Bix Beiderbecke, I never heard him say an unkind word about another person, professional or otherwise. So that I would like to have as my tribute to the memory of Bix, being such a wonderful, wonderful fellow. Again, this is Paul Whiteman, glad to add my voice to this tribute to Bix Beiderbecke.
Whiteman's arduous schedule demanded more of the orchestra than it could provide. Weekly radio programs demanded dozens of new arrangements and a largely expanded repertoire. The recovery Bix had enjoyed during his winter in Davenport was quickly negated by the constant and increasing pressure of a hectic routine. He headed back to Davenport in October 1929. This is Bix, a biographical series made possible through a grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Consultants for the series were John Steiner, along with Joseph Campbell and Philip Evans. Commentary was recorded by Frank Powers. Continuity was written by Mary Kay Fulton. Audio engineer, Michael J. McGuire. Bix was researched, produced, and directed by Jim Grover. This is Bill Utter speaking for Miami University Radio.
Limited rights for this rebroadcast of Bix on WMKV 89.3 FM Cincinnati were given by WMUB FM, Miami University Broadcasting in Oxford, Ohio, courtesy of WMUB FM General Manager Cleve Callison. WMUB FM originally produced the program for broadcast in 1971. Any rebroadcast, internet streaming or archiving of this program by anyone other than WMKV is prohibited. WMKV would like to thank the original producer of the program, Jim Grover, for his vision and efforts to preserve this unique chapter in the history of jazz, authored by Bix, and Mr. Bill Utter, Director Emeritus of Miami University Broadcasting, who conceived the original program idea, narrated the original series, and has been instrumental in making this rebroadcast possible. Dave Bartholomew, volunteer and host of the WMKV weekly program Friction, deserves special thanks for his labor of love in remastering Bix. The advisory group that oversaw the project to rebroadcast Bix include Frank Powers, commentator on the original series, Dave Bartholomew, Bill Utter, Cleve Collison, WMUB General Manager, Dave Schramm, WMKV Coordinator of Online Services, Mike Farrar, WMKV Coordinator of Production Services, Joe Schooner, WMKV Intern from the University of Cincinnati College Conservatory of Music, Media Division, and Alan Vyosky, WMKV General Manager. Please stay tuned for the best in big band era music right here on WMKV, the way radio was meant to be.